Welcome to Marijuana Compassion and Common Sense, the show that tells you the truth about marijuana, reveals the politics behind its prohibition, gives you the facts and information about its legendary health and medical benefits, and tries to clear up all that legal mumbo-jumbo that makes it so difficult, so dangerous, and nearly impossible for you to avail yourself of this ancient medicinal herb. Well, good day, good day, good day. I'm glad you can join us, or maybe it's evening when you're listening to us. You can listen to us, of course, 24/7 right here on Blog Talk Radio, and we want to thank you so much for taking the time to log in. You don't tune in, as I always say, to log in and listen to today's show, tomorrow's show, and I hope you're going to find it. And to listen, folks, we have a really fascinating show for you. First, I guess I should introduce myself. I'm Lanny Swerdlow, RNLNC. I'm a marijuana activist from way back when, and we have been doing this show for 8 years now, and I want to thank you for joining us for tonight's show, because today's show is a really great show. We have as our guest a United States Senate candidate from the state of California, Pat Harris. And you may not have heard of Mr. Harris, but I think you're going to hear more and more about him because he's quite the person. He's an unapologetic progressive, and I love that, running for the U.S. Senate from the state of California in the 2018 election. That's the one that's coming up this June for the primary against incumbent Dianne Feinstein, who has been our senator for too long. He believes it's time for a truly progressive leader who is ready to not only fight the Trump agenda, but can set a strong vision for Californians to act as a blueprint for the rest of the country. That's it, California, blueprint for the rest of the country. Really true. His platform includes building more affordable housing to address homelessness, providing student debt relief, improving public education, upgrading our crumbling infrastructure with increased public works spending, implementing paid parental leave for all working men and women, and supporting common sense gun safety legislation. And yes, it includes promoting marijuana legalization and removing the barriers to the implementation of Prop 64 so that access is available throughout California safely, reliably, locally, and affordably. Pat believes that by bringing all voices to the table, including those of cannabis consumers and producers, a truly progressive agenda can be forged that will benefit the vast majority of Californians. Pat grew up in a middle-class family in a small farming community in Arkansas. He graduated from the University of Arkansas, where he's awarded the J. William Fulbright Award as the Outstanding History Student. He graduated Phi Beta Kappa and was a Rhodes Scholar finalist in the state of Arkansas. In 1993, he graduated with a law degree from the University of Michigan Law School in Ann Arbor, Michigan, which, by the way, which was one of the first places in this country to decriminalize marijuana, reducing possession of less than an ounce to a $5 fine. For the past 23 years, Pat has practiced law, first in Tennessee as a public defender, later working in private practice as a criminal defense attorney, and most recently as a civil rights attorney, where he represented Hispanic, Black, and American Armenian minority communities against cases involving excessive force, wrongful death, and false imprisonment involving law enforcement. He has never backed down from fighting the establishment and has a proven track record of winning difficult battles, including taking on the Catholic Church over the abuse of children. So, Mr. Harris is an exceptional individual. I had the chance to meet him at the California State Democratic Convention in San Diego last February, and we had a booth. Brownie Mary Democrats had a booth right opposite his booth, and had some wonderful talks, and I came around with great admiration for this gentleman, and I think as you listen to him to tonight's show, today's show, whenever you're listening to it, you will also develop that same admiration. Okay, well, before we get to Pat, of course, I want to get to my little op-ed that I always begin the show with, and I think you're going to find this one entering. This one is about what has marijuana legalization wrought. What I mean, what is happening, what has happened to this country because we have legalized marijuana. And there's a new report that came out recently from the Drug Policy Alliance. It's entitled From Prohibition to Progress, a Status Report on Marijuana Legalization. It is an amazing report, and you can see it yourself. Now, what I'm about to read, my op-ed, is based on information I gleaned from this report. But if you'd like to get a copy of it, you can get it on the website at www.drugpolicy.org/legalization-status-report. That's drugpolicy.org/legalization-status-report, and I'll give that out again later on in the show. But it's a marvelous report full of graphs. And it's perfect to have on your coffee table because it's big and it looks really good. And so somebody come in there will see that and say, hey, what's this? They give you a really good chance to talk to them, especially if they are waffling on this issue of marijuana legalization. But let's take a look at what has happened in the states that have actually legalized cannabis in 2012 and 2014. These are the laboratories, right? So let's take a look at what the results are from these state laboratories. Well, first off, cannabis arrests are down. Arrests for cannabis in all legal cannabis states and Washington, D.C. plummeted, saving hundreds of millions of dollars and sparing thousands of people from being branded with lifelong criminal records. The total number of low-level cannabis court filings in Washington fell by, get this, 98% between 2011 and 2015. The total number of cannabis-related court filings in Colorado decreased by 81% between 2012 and 2015, and cannabis possession charges dropped by 88%. In Washington, D.C., cannabis arrests decreased 76% from 2013 to 2016, with possession arrests falling by 98.6%. In Oregon, the number of cannabis arrests declined by 96% from 2013 to 2016. And in Alaska, the number of cannabis arrests for possession and sales and manufacturing declined by 93% from 2013 to 2015. So that means, tens of hundreds of thousands of arrests are not being done. Police are getting, in Colorado, for example, arrests before marijuana legalization when it was 80,000 a year. Now it's less than 2,000 a year. That's 78,000 less arrests that Colorado police are making. What does an arrest take? A half hour, an hour, an hour and a half? It takes a long time. So the police are getting 100,000 hours at least of spare time. And the question is, I thought I'd call up the Denver Post and ask, hey, it's a reporter, says, anybody done a story on what the police are doing with all this free time from no longer having to enforce marijuana laws? They haven't fired anybody, so what are they doing with all this time? Unless, of course, they're just eating more donuts, but it's an amazing drop in the criminal records. Okay, what else is going on? Cannabis decriminalization and penalty reductions for youth and young adults. So what's happened with our young people now that marijuana has been decriminalized and legalized? Well, in several states, cannabis legalization is reducing the historically high numbers of youth under 18 years of age and young adults between 18 and 20 years stopped and arrested for cannabis offenses. Now, it's a little uneven. Not all states have really seen youth arrests go down, but a number have. And I think it's going to take a little bit of while for things to settle out in that regard. One of the most important things is that cannabis legalization lowers opioid-related harm. That's right. Opioid overdose rates are almost 25% lower in states with medical cannabis access than in states with no legal access to cannabis. The reductions in overdose rates have increased over time. So the longer marijuana is legalized, the higher the number of deaths continues to decrease. Legal access to medical cannabis has been associated with a 23% reduction in opioid dependence or abuse-related hospitalizations and 15% fewer opioid treatment admissions. This is amazing. And yet all these opioid commissions, none of them are looking at cannabis. It's the only thing that works, and they won't look at it, that marijuana has beneficial uses. Youth cannabis use has been stable. The people who are opposing all the legalization say, oh, my God, legalize it, and kids are going to start using marijuana, likely, well, that's not what's happened. Youth cannabis use rates have remained stable in states that have legalized cannabis for adults aged 21 and older. In Washington, Colorado, and Alaska, rates of cannabis use among high school students largely resemble national rates where marijuana is illegal. And, you know, I think what's happened, I really thought it would go up, but it didn't. And I think maybe because it's no longer got the forbidden fruit to anymore. You know, oh, my parents are doing that. I don't want to do that anymore. I don't want to do what my parents do. Who knows? All right. Legalization has not made our roads less safe. DUI arrests are down in Colorado and Washington. The total number of arrests for driving under the influence of alcohol and other drugs has declined in Colorado and Washington, the first two states to regulate cannabis for adult use. There is no correlation between cannabis legalization and crash rates. The crash rates in both states are statistically similar to comparable states without legal cannabis. So our roads have not become, you know, the horror places that all the people says is going to happen if marijuana was legalized. Well, interestingly enough, calls to poison control centers and visits to emergency departments for cannabis exposure remains relatively uncommon. It always was, and guess what? It still is. In Oregon, less than 1% of calls to the state poison center in 2016 related to cannabis exposure. And of course, that's, you know, how many tens of hundreds of thousands of people are smoking marijuana in Oregon, and less than 1% of the calls to the poison center were about cannabis. In Colorado, less than 1%, actually 0.04% of the state's 2.3 million emergency department visits in 2014 were for cannabis exposure. So, once again, it hasn't overflowed our emergency rooms with people. You know, what, you know, the biggest thing going to our emergency room still is alcohol. And maybe that's going to go down a bit because some of these people using alcohol are going to stop using alcohol and start using cannabis. Cannabis tax revenues have exceeded initial estimates. Listen to this. Cannabis sales in Washington generated $315 million in tax revenues in the 2016-17 fiscal year. Cannabis sales have generated almost $600 million for Colorado since sales began on January 1st, 2014. That's over half $1 billion. And, you know, Colorado is not that big a state. By the end of 2016 and 17 fiscal year, Oregon collected $70 million, more than double the predicted revenue. And finally, very important, the cannabis industry is creating jobs. That's right, jobs. Preliminary estimates suggest that the legal cannabis industry employs between 165,000 to 230,000 full and part-time workers across the country. Legal. You probably triple that number for illegal. This number will only continue to grow as more states legalize cannabis and replace the unregulated markets with new legal markets. So there you have it. All these predictions from the drug warriors, the sky will fall in if we legalize marijuana, none of it's come true. None of it's come true. And a lot of the things that the pro-marijuana people were saying have come true. The state revenues, the drop in crime, all these kind of things that have absolutely happened correctly. And so it's been a major, major benefit with very, very few side negative benefits as a result. Once again, these statistics and lots more are in this report from the Drug Policy Alliance called From Prohibition to Progress, a staff report on marijuana legalization. And you can get hold of that report by going to www.drugpolicy.org/legalization-status-report. You know, it's called a status report. So go to drugpolicy.org/legalization-status-report. And it's a fantastic report. Print it out. Put it on your coffee table. Give it to your friends or your family members who are looking askance at the fact that you think marijuana is a good thing, and it could very well change your mind. Well done, a very well done report. Well, what is really well done, of course, what is really well done is, well, we haven't roasted him or anything, but really is our guest, Pat Harris. Like I said, I had met Mr. Harris at the California State Democratic Convention. He just blew me away because I really didn't know the guy. The more I got to talk with him, the more I was more and more impressed. And when the candidates, it was Dianne Feinstein and Kevin DeLeon and Pat Harris, got up before the 3,000 delegates to make their presentation, Pat Harris just wowed them, really did a fine job. So I am so pleased to have him here on the show today. Pat Harris, soon to be, hopefully, Senator Pat Harris. Pat, welcome to the Marijuana Compassion and Common Sense.
Thanks, Lenny. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, it's great. I really got to know you well was when you were kind enough to invite me to join you on a tour of Adelanto. This is the only city in the entire San Bernardino County that has allowed marijuana legalization to proceed according to Proposition 64. What led you to Adelanto?
Well, you know, it's funny because after I became more and more interested in the cannabis issue, we decided about 3 months ago, we decided, let's go to the International Cannabis Conference. Let's go talk to people who are actually involved in the industry and learn more and try and figure out, you know, as my platform was sort of solidifying, I wanted to find out more and more about cannabis and not just the stuff that's very easily, you know, you can go in the media and you can go on Google and find. I wanted to talk to people who were actually in the industry. So that's what actually led me to Adelanto was I went to the International Cannabis Conference in San Francisco and met the mayor of Adelanto there who started telling me how he managed to take that town from a $500,000 deficit to a $500,000 surplus based on the marijuana industry there. And I said, I got to come see this. He kept saying, you need to see these facilities. It's nothing like you imagine. It's not like you envision. So I went out there, did a tour of the facilities and went around town. And since then, I've been inviting people back. Obviously, you and I went out there a couple of weeks ago with some other people just to show them because it is amazing. It is amazing what Adelanto's done, and it is amazing what the future holds for that community.
Well, you know, one of the things I remember when we were driving in there, there was this big sign in front of this huge warehouse building which said like 420 storage, 420 spaces. And what this facility was doing is amazing. They were renting out space to cannabis, you know, entrepreneurs. They could rent a space. They would go to the city, get their license to cultivate or manufacture whatever, and they would rent space in this facility specifically constructed for marijuana businesses. And everything seemed so normal and natural. There wasn't anything crazy going on. It just seemed business as usual.
Yeah, they've accepted it in a enormous way. I mean, the mayor has done a great job of explaining it to the public there. And as you said, it's become, you know, they have an industrial park, which is a good portion of it is taken up by cannabis-related businesses. Everyone understands that the taxes are, you know, that are coming in from the industries are helping to pay for other facilities in Adelanto, helping to pay for road construction, helping to pay for some. They actually built an entertainment center that is largely based on cannabis revenue. You know, the community, he's done a great job explaining to them that the cannabis community can, in fact, not only be a great thing medically, obviously, but it's tremendous economically. And they're the shining example, at least right now.
And this shining example is something that you're promoting. How do you feel cannabis if you're elected U.S. Senator, how can you help California progress with its marijuana legalization program?
Well, I think, first of all, we are still, despite the fact that obviously cannabis has been around for, you know, 80 years or more, we are still lacking in an understanding, an education for the public. The public still, to a large degree, views it cannabis is only, you know, two young guys in a basement smoking a joint in their parents' house. And educationally, I think that what the industry needs, it doesn't need people who are going to, you know, support cannabis, because that's a fairly easy thing to do now. Obviously, the voters support it. What the industry needs is someone to champion it, someone to be out front talking about this, talking about, you know, when we talk about, for example, the opioid crisis, there needs to be someone out front talking about, look, what we're seeing in Colorado and Washington and places where cannabis is for recreational use is being used, we're seeing that opioid use is down anywhere from 20 to 30% as people use cannabis to sort of get off of opioids or use it in place of opioids. Those are the kind of things the public doesn't know. You know, you and I talked about in Adelanto, one of the most amazing statistics is in Colorado, domestic violence is down 25%. And law enforcement there credits that to cannabis use versus alcohol use. What cannabis needs from a senator isn't just support. Anybody can support it. Anybody, like I said, it's become very easy to vote for it now because it's the majority of the public supports it, especially in California. What the industry needs is a champion and someone who's out there educating, constantly talking about what works and why this is so important and why this issue needs to come to the forefront, because this has the potential. I tell people all the time, I said, cannabis is not going to solve our problems, but it is going to be a partial solution to a lot of them. And we need to recognize that, and we need to put it out front, and we need a senator who's going to do that.
Absolutely correct. It could mean a lot for California's economy. It could mean a lot for anybody's economy. What would you do if you got elected to the U.S. Senate to actually to bring federal law, or in conformity with California law? What would you do in the U.S. Senate to try to make things so California doesn't have to fear the federal government so much?
Well, first of all, you know, as you know and as we discussed, my background is as a criminal defense attorney. And, you know, that's where I first became familiar with cannabis and its effects on the criminal justice system. And it's obviously, as you know, a Schedule I drug. That needs to be immediately removed. It does not need to be in the category of a Schedule I drug. Nationwide, we need to remove that immediately. Secondly, we need to work the Department of Justice to go back to what we were talking about with the Obama administration, which the other day there seems to be a step in that direction, that the federal government is going to just back off of states that have legalized recreational use. You know, every state at this point can make its decision whether it's going to have medical use, recreational use, whatever, but the federal government needs to stay out and let the states make those decisions. And I think we at least seem to be taking a step in that direction. But in the meantime, the idea of criminalizing it in terms of a Schedule I drug, that's got to be removed immediately. And that's one of the first things I would do as a senator to work on.
Certainly one of the most important things. One of the other problems that, of course, the business has is this banking problem where they're they're only in a cash business. It's absurd. How could you help? What do you think needs to be done to change that?
Public banks. We absolutely need public banks. This is not only for the cannabis industry, but certainly for a number of different things, for a number of different reasons, including providing potential loans and potential startup cash for people who wouldn't necessarily be able to qualify for with private institutions. So I'm a big supporter of public banks. I believe that clearly a public bank with the ability to accept cannabis money is the solution there, and I've been supportive of that from the very beginning.
Well, North Dakota's had a state bank for a long time, and it's worked out very, very well there. They've certainly saved millions of dollars and this kind of stuff, and yet there still seems to be so – that doesn't happen anywhere else. Why is such a problem with such a good example in Dakota? Why are we having this problem?
What North Dakota's shown, you're exactly right. What North Dakota's shown is, you know, the importance of being able – you bring in money to a public bank, especially let's take California. And now the legalization of cannabis. We have the ability in a public bank to have the cannabis money deposited, and as anybody who's been in the banking industry knows, your ability to then turn around and help build a community, help loan money, is based on, obviously, the money you get coming in. The cannabis industry, with the use of a public bank, is going to make a huge difference in minority communities, for example, where they don't normally are not able to get access to loans, not access to startup funds for businesses. A public bank would go such a huge step toward providing funding for people who can't get it, and the cannabis money flowing into the bank would then, in turn, allow them to do enormous amounts of good work in communities that, in fact, have been harmed dramatically by the criminalization of cannabis. So it would go a long way in sort of helping to remedy some of the problems in those communities in the past. I've been a huge supporter of a public bank, and I think it's in California is a progressive state where we are, we generally try to lead the nation and try and come up with the most innovative ideas. This ought to be at the top of our list.
Well, that's an interesting point you make. What could something like the Department of Agriculture should be doing to promote cannabis? Let's say we do legalize it. What activities should you think the Department of Agriculture should undertake to promote cannabis growing the same way it does for promoting other agricultural crops?
And that's exactly what they ought to be doing. The Department of Agriculture is, it does a really nice job of being able to go out and sort of help farmers find funding sources, for example. Provides education in terms of, what they should and shouldn't be doing. And the Department of Agriculture, I actually worked in Washington, D.C. for a congressman whose district was largely agriculture, and we had to deal with the Department of Agriculture a lot. They actually provide a lot of good services. When you're sitting here now with the potential, the services they can offer, and the federal government refusing to let them do it for cannabis, you're really hurting. You're not hurting the government. You're hurting the potential cannabis growers. You're hurting the small businessmen. You're hurting the small farmers. They need the access and the understanding of how best to be able to grow the crops. They need the understanding of how to get funding for it. They need the help, and the Department of Agriculture needs to be treating it like they treat corn, like they treat wheat, like they treat any other product. And the interesting thing, Lanny, would be if we ever get to a point where they pay out because cannabis becomes so popular, we actually start subsidizing the industry not to grow. That would be very interesting.
Well, it's interesting. I was listening to NPR the other day, and they had some soybean farmers on there, and they're talking about the problem they've been having over the years, and now with the Trump's trade thing where China wants to slap an import tax on it. It's going to cause them all kinds of problems. I think cannabis would probably grow really great in some of these states where they're growing soybeans if that becomes a problem.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think the Department of Agriculture, if they would accept it and take it on board and get enthusiastic about it, they could do amazing things. They could do amazing things for the – because you and I have talked about this, that we're heading in a direction where cannabis is kind of a little bit on the edge of being turned into a corporate crop, where we're obviously getting the tobacco companies, the drug companies involved. And we've got to be careful. We've got to make sure that the small growers are not being edged out and pushed out. And the Department of Agriculture could go a long way into making sure that doesn't happen. So let's hope that does.
Absolutely. Now, one of the key questions I really would like, and I know our listeners would really like to know, on this issue, on the issue of marijuana, how do you differ from Senator Dianne Feinstein and the other major candidate in the race, Kevin DeLeon? How is your position different, and how would you make things better compared to the two of them?
Well, I guess the best way to put it, I'm about 180 degrees away from Dianne Feinstein. She has always been – she began with being a strong opponent of medical marijuana, even after California passed legislation to allow for medical marijuana. She opposed it. She eventually came around to sort of, she could accept medical marijuana to some degree, but she still opposed recreational. And even after our recent passage to legalize it, she still came out and said, look, I don't believe in the legalization of recreational marijuana. I'm still opposed to it. So we have a Democratic senator in the most progressive state in the union who actually is on the side of Jeff Sessions and the Department of Justice when it comes to trying to shut down the recreational sale of marijuana. So we're at about 180 degrees. I'd say with Kevin De Leon, I'm about 90 degrees from him. Kevin started off with his statements back as in 2016 saying he did not support recreational marijuana. He came out in an interview in the San Francisco Chronicle, stated that, you know, he saw it as still a gateway drug, that a number of his friends were addicted to marijuana when they were growing up, and kind of gave a pretty strong anti-cannabis argument. He has, as politicians are wont to do, as the winds have blown a little bit more in the direction, and certainly with the passage of the legalization, he now says, well, he accepts the legalization for recreational use, but he still has some reservations. So he's kind of trying to play both sides of the fence. He's kind of sitting on the fence a little bit and playing both sides. He's at least a little better than Senator Feinstein, but neither one of them are the champion that cannabis needs.
And you are so right, need a champion. And after spending the day with you at Atlanta, I think you know why it needs a champion, and you're that person to be that. Well, listen, I need to put you on a break for just a couple minutes because I got a commercial and a couple announcements, and we'll get back in about 3 or 4 minutes because I want to talk with you about what just happened yesterday, Friday, when Senator Cory Gardner from Colorado made the announcement that President Trump is now in support of allowing states to go forward with the marijuana legalization law. I'd like to get your take on that. So just hang tight for a few minutes. We'll be right back with you. Okay?
Thanks.
All righty. So now let's get to one of my favorite little things to talk about, and that's, of course, hey, this is something that everybody needs, right? You need it. It is called Higher Power 420. So what's Higher Power 420? Well, Higher 4 Power 20 is a gorgeous and mind-boggling limited edition print predicting everyone's favorite deities in a joyous 420 celebration. That's right. Conceived and designed by moi, Lanny Swerdlow, and artistically rendered by Shane Master Creation Hibbets, Higher 420, Power 420 is an engaging, thought-provoking, and satiric look at the foibles of religion and the role of marijuana can play in today's polarized and estranged world. For thousands of years, marijuana has aided the social cohesion of emerging societies by reducing stress and anxiety. It calms people down, makes it easier for them to exist harmoniously with each other by creating a mental state of altruism, understanding, and compassion. This remains a common communal token experience today, as many cannabis consumers describe achieving a similar mental state when they imbibe. You know, with all the violent religious strife going on in the Middle East, it's not so unreasonable to conclude that the Middle East was a lot calmer and a lot more tolerant when smoking hash was part of the many social interactions and rituals. Cannabis brings people together, broadens their perspectives, and helps them take pleasure in the company of other people they normally would find it difficult to be with. That's the core of this gorgeous art print, Higher Power 420. It's a beautiful art print depicting the gathering together of the iconic religious figures of today, enjoying each other's company. Higher Power 420 depicts everyone's favorite deity in a joyous 420 celebration as they escape from their adherence incessant squabbles, as they relax and enjoy each other's companies while sharing their common, albeit supernatural, humanity. Only cannabis could allow them to kick back with each other as well as help them overlook and forget about their adherents' competing claims to theistic domination. In Higher Power 420, they share this all together. It's a beautiful print. It's a limited edition iconograph. Each 16-inch by 20-inch art print is signed and numbered by the artist and comes with a certificate of authenticity. Be the first to have one adorn the wall of your home or office. Be the first in your block. It's a sure conversation piece, wherever it is. Also, makes the perfect gift for your sophisticated cannabis consumer friends. So how do you get one? It's very easy. It's on the web. Isn't everything on the web? Go to HigherPower420, that's the numerals, 420, HigherPower420.com. You'll see the print. You'll see how to order it, and you'll love it, let me tell you. Take it out. Check it out. HigherPower420. Okay, What else? All right. Well, I want to remind you that this show is from the Marijuana Anti-Prohibition Project. And if you would like to get my – if you find what my op-ed and this information of interest, you can get my email newsletter absolutely free. And how you get it? Very simple. Go to marijuananews.com. That's one word, marijuananews.com. And on the home page at the top, you'll see a thing where it says newsletter. Just click on that, and you can subscribe to my newsletter. And, you know, I'll tell you, I think you'll really like it. But if sometime you decide, well, I don't need this one more thing cluttering up my email basket, then just scroll down to the bottom, and you can unsubscribe. And you will be unsubscribed. I know a lot of times you get these things, you hit unsubscribe, and you still keep getting it. No, I guarantee you, you don't like it, you won't get it anymore. I don't ever want to. I wouldn't want that to happen to me. But check it out. Go to marijuananews.org and click on newsletter, fill out the form, and you will start receiving it only two or three times a month. I will not inundate you with all kinds of, oh, you got to read this, you got to read that, you got to read this. No. Each time it's original, and I think you will find it of great interest. Oh, one other thing I'll mention real quickly. When you logged in to our show today, you probably saw the little button, blue button that said follow button. That is, if you're not a follower of us now, I really would appreciate it if you take a second and just click on that follow button. What that will do, of course, you will get an email whenever we have a new show, letting you have that we have a new show for you to listen to. But most importantly, the more followers we get, the higher up we go on the blogtalkradio.com pecking ladder. And the higher we get on the pecking ladder, the more publicity we get. So become a follower of Marijuana Compassion and Common Sense and click that little blue button when you log in. You don't have to do it every time. Just do it once, and you'll become a follower of Marijuana Compassion and Common Sense. Okay, and now let's get back to our interview with Pat Harris, who is running for the U.S. Senate from here in California, facing the formidable opposition of Senator Dianne Feinstein and somewhat opposition from Kevin DeLeon, with an amazing, amazing platform that I think is really phenomenal. Before we get, I want to talk about Trump and this. Before we get to that, tell us a little bit about your position on some other issues, Pat. There's a lot more. I mean, you're not just about marijuana. You're a lot more than that. Why don't you tell us about a few of the other issues that are important to you and how you would tackle them if elected to the U.S. Senate?
Well, I hate to use the comparison. It gets overused, unfortunately, but I am pretty much aligned with the Bernie Sanders sort of platform. I agree with a lot of what Bernie had to say, and I'm a progressive Democrat. I believe very strongly in Medicare for All. I also believe very strongly in that the Democratic Party has deserted working men and women, and that we have gone basically to Wall Street to get corporate donations, and, you know, we have become nothing more than sort of Republican light. I want to take the Democratic Party back to being the party of working men and women. When we were doing innovative things, when we came up with the ideas that built not only the New Deal, but the Great Society and the programs of Medicare, Head Start, TVA, all the wonderful, innovative, imaginative things that the Democratic Party used to do, that's my platform, is based on taking it back to those days. But as I tell people, we got to be careful, because when I talk about it, or when people talk about we need to take this country back, we don't need to take the country back. We need to take the country forward. So when I talk about that, what I'm really trying to say is the impetus of those programs was imagination and innovation and being willing to try things to help working men and women. We need the same programs for the future of this country. That's why Medicare for All, that's why 100% renewables, those kind of things, reform of the criminal justice system, those are in things that need to be a forward-looking platform that would actually take this country, not only would it take this country so much more back to the basics of what made it great, but it would also provide our working men and women, the middle class, the lower classes, we need to provide them with an actual basic income where one job allows them to make a decent living. So that's really the things I talk about. I mean, I have a lot of specific issues. I believe very strongly in cutting Defense Department spending, which I think is way out of control. I believe very strongly, and I have a program for getting equal pay for women. Those are kind of other issues I'm strong about. But just overall, a very progressive platform that moves this country forward with innovative and imaginative ideas. So that's kind of the basis of my platform.
Well, how and the basis of your platform, how do you differ from Feinstein and DeLeon?
Well, again, with Senator Feinstein and Senator DeLeon, with both of them, they take corporate donations. And right off the bat, I explain to people, you know, this country has been corrupted by essentially both parties going to Wall Street, going to large corporations, going to big pharma, big oil, big real estate companies, big agriculture, and taking the money from them in order to get reelected. It's all about reelection. It's all about winning the next contest. And so they go there, they get the money, and then surprise, surprise, when big pharma expects something. I mean, I'll give you an example. Kevin DeLeon in the state Senate, there was a bill, SB 790, that was very important to cutting back so that big pharma couldn't essentially be giving doctors vacations and extra bonuses and all kinds of things. And SB 790 was an important bill. Well, Kevin DeLeon abstained from voting on it. And the reason he abstained from voting on it, because he was taking money from big pharma. I think in his heart, and I think Kevin's a good guy, and I think in his heart he knew that's wrong, but he couldn't go against the people who are supporting his reelection. That's the ultimate corruption of the system. And both of them, both Senator Feinstein and Kevin DeLeon, take corporate donations. I don't. I only take individual donations. I'll never take a corporate donation, period. That's one huge difference. There's a number of other differences. For example, Senator Feinstein is a big supporter of the Defense Department and continuing to raise the budget. Kevin DeLeon has essentially taken no position. My position is very strong that I believe we need to cut the Defense Department. We need to take the money from the Defense Department that we cut. We need to put it into education and paying our teachers. We need to put it into scientific research and to medical research, so that we can help cure things like Alzheimer's and we can work on diabetes and things like that that would actually have a direct effect on people's lives. Those are the kind of things that separate me from Senator Feinstein and Senator DeLeon. And if you actually go to my website, I have an entire page of the differences between myself and Senator Feinstein.
Okay, so you can see it right there. In a chart or something. That's really great. Well, listen,
yes.
I want to talk a little bit about this little thing that just recently happened on just the other day, where Senator Cory Gardner, who was a Republican U.S. Senator in Colorado, came out with this kind of blockbuster statement that President Trump is now in support of allowing states to go forward with their marijuana legalization programs. Now, he said that when he was a candidate, but after he became president, and especially with the appointment of Jeff Sessions as Attorney General, everybody was thinking, well, he's really going back on it. And when Attorney General Jeff Sessions rescinded the Cole memo from the Obama administration, which essentially said if states do these eight things, the feds will have a hands-off approach to their marijuana legalization programs. We rescinded that memo. Senator Gardner put a hold on all the Department of Justice nominees, which was, of course, was causing, I guess, Trump a lot of headaches. And so apparently he had a phone call with Trump just the other day, and here's what he said. He said, since the campaign, President Trump has consistently supported states' rights to decide for themselves how to best approach marijuana. Late Wednesday, I received a commitment from the president that the Department of Justice rescission of the Cole memo will not impact Colorado's legal marijuana industry. Furthermore, President Trump has assured me that he will support a federalism-based legislative solution to fix the state's rights issues once and for all. Okay, I assume when he said Colorado, it's kind of a metaphor for all the other states that have legalized it. But what do you think about this statement? Do you trust Trump to actually do this?
No, not at all. I think it's the typical sort of Trump thing. I jokingly say Trump is sort of, he's entered a new phase. He's in his hug me stage. He wants everybody to like him all of a sudden. So he's trying to get everybody to hug him. Whoever comes in front of him, he's now sort of you know, whatever they want, he's saying, sure, I'm for it. And then, you know, 5 minutes later, they walk out of the Oval Office and he's tweeting against it. I don't trust him at all. I don't think that's realistic. I think that Jeff Sessions is a true believer. And I think, Jeff Sessions, I have very strong images in my mind that after he finishes work, he goes home and puts Reefer Madness on VCR, his old VCR with the tape, and watches Reefer Madness every night. I just don't believe, for a second anything Trump says about that. I don't trust him, and I think that if tomorrow another senator went in and said, we've got to, we absolutely need to make sure that we continue to rescind the Cole Amendment, then he'd jump on board that just as well. So I don't have any faith in that whatsoever.
Well, he's got his work. I mean, you know, the Republicans in the Washington D.C. legislatures have always been majority opposed to any kind of marijuana law reform. It always shows in the votes. Only about 25% of the Republicans there support marijuana law reform. It's mainly the huge number of Democrats that support that usually whatever does get out of there. And the Republican leadership doesn't allow marijuana law reform bills to get out for a vote ever. So
yeah.
I don't know how he's going to be able to convince those people to do it. And the one thing especially that I kind of feel that is the police. You know, I doubt if he called up the police and checked with them before he had this conversation with Cory Gardner. And once they find out that he wants to allow states to go, I think they're going to really hit him hard about this because they are totally opposed to marijuana legalization. They will lose lots of money and lots of power with the legalization of marijuana, especially with the ending of the war on drugs. And he loves cops. He's made that very clear. And if they tell him to, you know, stop doing that, I have a sneaky hunch he'll stop doing it.
I think you're exactly right. Like I said, I think whoever's in front of him, he's in his hug me stage. Whoever's in front of him, he's going to basically say, you know, sure, whatever you want, and come out in favor of it. And I just don't trust him at all to keep his word or what he told one person who's in front of him at a particular time. I just don't believe it.
Well, I agree with you. We'll have to wait and see what happens over the next few weeks. It will be very interesting. Well, we're beginning to run out of a little time here in the interview. And one of the questions I always like to ask when I have a person on the show who's a political candidate or an elected official, I always say, why do you want to do it? It's so much work. You got to raise all this money and you got to put up all this kind of stuff. Why would you want to subject yourself to this kind of stress and anxiety to become U.S. senator? What is the driving force behind you?
Well, the driving force for me was two parts. My wife told me, number one, if I didn't get out of the house and quit throwing things at the television every night, she was going to divorce me. So that was one thing. But the second thing was I see where we've reached a turning point. We've, for the first time in my life at least, I feel like we are going to make a really dramatic change in what direction we go. I believe that we have to have fighters at this point. I believe we have to have people who are going to stand up, who realize that we're not going to be able to compromise with the Republicans anymore. They stopped compromising 8 or 9 years ago when Obama was elected. We have to have people who are going to fight back the way they fight. We have to have people who are going to stand up and crusade, who are going to take issues, cannabis being one example, Medicare for All being another, cutting Defense Department, who are willing to go on television, go on radio, go on podcasts, write books. I put it that, you know, I think Bernie Sanders has done a great job of pushing Medicare for All and not taking corporate donations because he's out there all the time pushing it. Elizabeth Warren's done a nice job on Wall Street reform because she's out there talking about it. We have to have people like that. I get tickled because Dianne Feinstein said at a town hall here in L.A., she said, we don't need rabble-rousers in the Senate. And my first reaction was, that's exactly what we need in the Senate. We need rabble-rousers. We need people who are going to raise hell over this stuff and what's going on, because we're not going to change it by just keeping doing the same things we've been doing and expecting different results. She's not going to change the way she does business. in the way she works or tries to work with Republicans, just as Kevin DeLeon is going to go there as a young senator with a career, wanting to get reelected, wanting to be there for the next 20 years, and again, taking corporate donations. These things aren't going to change if we keep doing the same things over and over. I don't feel the pressure. I got to tell you, Lanny, I don't feel the pressure because for me, this is something of a it's a crusade for me. It is something I feel very strongly about. I go to the Senate. I don't need to get reelected. I'm not there to be loved or to get reelected in 6 years. I'm not going to worry about it. I'm not going to stress about it. For 6 years, I am going to work myself to the bone to get these issues out there, to get people supporting them, to get the public behind them. And then if that is something the public's happy with, great. If they're not, I am more than happy. I've told people before my goal in life is to actually open a dog shelter for older dogs. I'm more than happy to come retire back to California and open up a dog shelter. I just don't – the stress is just not there for me. I don't see it as – I've never understood politicians who feel like, oh, my God, the end of the world is going to come if I lose an election. It's not the end of the world. You go on with your life and do something bigger and bolder and different. So I just don't feel the stress, but I know what you're talking about because yeah. Most of them do seem to they seem to be bowing under the stress, but that's not the way this campaign's been.
So, you know, what is your strategy then to win? I mean, you know, Dianne Feinstein, of course, is extremely well known. Kevin DeLeon was president pro tem of the California Senate. What is your strategy to get out to the voters of California and let them know about your candidacy?
Well, we took an old 1980s school bus. It's very interesting. And we've renovated it. We put about 18 solar panels on the roof, and the entire inside, the energy in the inside, runs on solar energy. Then we converted the bus to ethanol, so the bus itself runs on ethanol. Everything in it's recycled. We take that bus, and our strategy has been, look, we're not going to stay in Los Angeles. We're going to get outside and actually talk to people in Fresno, Sacramento, Chico, go out into the deserts. We've been out already to San Bernardino County. My gosh, we've been out there probably 8 or 9 times. Riverside County. We get out to areas where politicians don't normally go, and we not only go there once or twice, we go there constantly. We're pretty much on the road anywhere from 3 weeks to 3.5 weeks of every month, and we're going to places other politicians won't go. That's the strategy, is because out in those areas, there are people who are looking for somebody to take on Dianne Feinstein. You know, Dianne's, it's no question she's got huge amounts of name recognition and even more money. But even with all that, the polls show that only about 40% of the public wants her reelected. That's a very large 60% group who are willing to vote against her if they have a candidate they can get behind. And I believe very strongly that I am the candidate that can get not only progressive Democrats, I can get independents, I can even get some Republicans, because I grew up in those areas, in the rural areas. I know how to talk to them. I know that they want, for example, Medicare for All. I know they want somebody who's going to fight for working men and women. I believe I'm the candidate for that, and that's the strategy, and that's how we've been doing it.
They need to hear what you say, because what you say is really so important, and you explain it very clearly and succinctly so it makes sense to people. So if people want to find out more about your candidacy, how can they go about doing that and supporting you?
I appreciate that. It's Pat Harris for Senate, and the 4 is F-O-R. It's spelled out. So it's patharrisforsenate.com. That's the best way to go. It's on our website. You can take a look. We've got just about every issue on there as to where we stand. We've got our schedule on there, where the bus is going to be and where we're going to be for the next month. We have pretty much any information. I mentioned earlier the page between myself and Dianne Feinstein. And then, of course, most importantly, we have a donate button. So, as I said, we only take individual donations, so we welcome people to hit the donate button. People always think, in fact, friends of mine always say, well, you know, gosh, the maximum donation is $2,700. I don't have that kind of money to give you. And I explain to them, you don't know how much it means to have $20, $50, $12. I mean, small donations build up. And it's not, I encourage people, just because they think, well, I can't give an amount that seems like a whole lot, everything counts. I've had donations as low as 59 cents, and it's welcome. So go on the website, take a look around, and if you like what you see, hit the donate button and send us, help us out.
So I take it you won't take money from big corporate marijuana either.
I won't. No. Okay. I've told people, you know, I've had labor unions approach me, and I support labor 110%, and they've approached me about money. I won't take it from them. I won't take it from green companies and support environmental things. It's the principle of when somebody, a corporation, gives you money, they expect something in return. They expect you to vote a certain way. And I don't even care if I agree with them on most of their positions. That's not what democracy is. Democracy is about what the people want. And that's who you ought to be representing, is the people.
You got it. You got it. Well, Pat, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on Marijuana, Compassion, and Common Sense. It's been great talking with you. Listen, folks, you heard – what was it? Give out your website again.
Sure. It's patharrisforsenate.com.
There you go. Well, check it out. And, Pat, best of luck in the campaign. If the best man wins, you're going to win. So thank you so much, and I hope I can run into you again, and sometimes we can chat some more.
I would love that, Lanny. Thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Okay, there we go. Pat Harris running for the United States Senate for the seat of Senator Dianne Feinstein, competing against Kevin DeLeon. Like I said, it's, you know, getting out there and getting people to hear him. That's what it's going to take, because once you hear this guy, he's very, very, very persuasive. Well, that's it for today's show. I hope you found it of interest. You know, I always say, if you like Marijuana, Compassion, Common Sense, I bet your friends or family members were, so let them know. They can go to blogtalkradio.com/marijuana news anytime, 24/7, and they can listen to the latest show. And then if you didn't notice, you can scroll down. You can see all the past shows for the last 5 or 6 years, so you can just listen to all kinds of past shows. You might see something there that really tweaks your imagination and you want to listen to. One other thing I want to mention very quickly is the Brownie Mary Democrats of California. I already mentioned it during the show, my talk with Pat. And Brownie Mary Democrats, of course, are one of only 7 statewide Democratic organizations chartered by the California Democratic Party. And they're working within the system to bring about the changes to marijuana so it is safely, reliably, locally, and affordably available everywhere. Proposition 64 passed. It's a great step forward, but it's not perfect. It needs some changes, and we need to work in our state legislature to make those changes. And we'll be talking about some of those changes going on later. But check out the website, BrownieMaryDemocrats.org, and if you are so inclined, become a member. Become a Brownie Mary Democrat. You will be very proud to do that. So until next week, I want to thank you for taking on until our next show, I want to thank you very much for joining us today here on Marijuana, Compassion, and Common Sense, the show that tells you the truth about marijuana and its legalization.
Is your check engine light on? Don't ignore it. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today and let our professional parts people scan your vehicle for free. We'll retrieve the codes, discuss possible solutions, and even help you find a professional technician if needed. Visit O'Reilly Auto Parts today for our free check engine light help. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts. Oh, oh, oh. O'Reilly.
Is your check engine light on? Don't ignore it. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today and let our professional parts people scan your vehicle for free. We'll retrieve the codes, discuss possible solutions, and even help you find a professional technician if needed. Visit O'Reilly Auto Parts today for our free check engine light help. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.